Welcome to Not Home Alone, a podcast from the family ministry at St. Albans Episcopal Church in Waco, Texas. I'm your host, Stephanie Drum, and I'm the minister to children, youth, and families here at St. Albans. My co-hosts for this series will be our two clergy, Aaron Zimmerman and Neil McGowan. In this series on parenting, we're looking at the love and logic technique, which helps you understand various skills you can use to foster security, independence, and love in your children. Everyone, welcome back to Not Home Alone for episode 5. I'm here again with Neil and Aaron from St. Albans, and I'm here with Andrea Zimmerman. We're happy to have all of you with us to talk about our last two skills. So these are the very last two skills of love and logic. There's 9 altogether. You can go back and listen to our previous episodes. So episodes 8 and 9 are a little bit, I think,
or skills almost, 8 and 9.
What did I say?
Episodes.
Oh, no, this is not episode 8 and 9. Skills 8 and 9.
On episode 5. I know.
On episode 5. No,
we're in a pandemic.
Deal.
It's okay.
It's, your brain is literally mush at this point. It's not just you. So these two skills at the very end, they're not really in order, but I do think that kind of as we go through the list, they get a little bit more specific maybe, or these are kind of an extension or almost a case study in some of the skills that we've talked about, because it's going to draw on those skills, including what we've talked about with consequences before. So skill number 8 is restitution, aka the energy drain. And this skill is intended to draw a line between a consequence and an issue that don't seem to really be connected. So if you have a hard time thinking of a natural consequence, that's certainly not just you. There's a lot of issues where the natural consequence isn't very clear. And so this skill of restitution is one that helps you to connect those two things. So here's how it works. If you can't think of an appropriate consequence because of whatever issue, fill in the blank, your kid doesn't clean their room and you need it cleaned for whatever, then you have an energy drain because of that. So because I had to clean your room, I'm now tired. And if you, to help me replenish my energy, I need you to do some of these chores around the house by Saturday. And so it doesn't have to be chores around the house, but that's a pretty common way of doing this skill. And so that connects, that restitution connects the initial issue with the chores, even though there may not be a natural link there in our minds.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, this idea of restitution is one that exists in American jurisprudence. If you go to court because you've been caught stealing money from a nonprofit where you were the treasurer, you then have to pay that money back. If you are in Ocean's 11 and you steal all the money from the vaults of the casinos of Terry Benedict, then in Ocean's 12, you have to pay the money back with interest. See, this works both in the criminal world and in the legitimate civilian world. Restitution is a thing. And in parenting, I think one of the great things about love and logic is it does help us move from that like punitive, with the example you gave, Stephanie, of cleaning your room, that's a great one because love and logic is based on letting children experience the consequences of their actions, not you punishing them for being quote unquote bad. If they don't clean their room, the consequence of the action is they have a messy room. The only problem with that is they don't care that they have a messy room. They're completely happy to wallow in their own filth and to live in squalor. And so you feel as a parent, like now I've lost my, now I have to punish, you know,
right.
Take away some privilege, no screen time for you, but that's not really a natural consequence. And, but this energy drain thing, making restitution is fantastic because yes, if the parent then has to clean the room, the parent then does lose energy. Like if you've ever cleaned a child's room, it's exhausting because not only is it like a whole day's worth of like organizing tiny toys, it's then also the grime that's on all the toys.
The smells.
And I just have to say, I am recording this right now. So because of the pandemic, we're all in different rooms. Andrea and I are in different rooms in the same house because of recording technical issues. And so I'm in some of our children's bedroom. And so I'm definitely like feeling this a lot right now. And I could give you examples that I won't. But
it's a very incarnational experience.
Yes,
for you.
Exactly. Exactly. This is so real. But yeah, so the room cleaning thing, if you end up cleaning your child's room, you will be exhausted. You will need to put your feet up at the end of the day. And this helps, I think, both you as a parent. This is what Love and Logic is so great. It helps you. It gives you permission as a parent to name the thing that, yeah, I spent a lot of energy on this and I'm exhausted. And it helps your child then realize, like, oh, if my parent ends up doing the thing for me that I was asked to do, unload the dishwasher, take out the trash, clean the room, if my parent ends up having to do that, that's not a win for the kid. Like, I pulled one over on mom and dad. They had to clean up my messes. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll pretend to be sad, but really I'm glad that they end up doing it because I just slacked off and they had to do my job. This helps them realize there is a consequence to that. If your parent is tired out, they will need to get their energy back. And that can be in any number of things. That can be calling the babysitter so the parents can go out and – you know,
and the kid pays for it. The kid pays
which the kid has to
for
pay
the babysitter.
For. Yes, that's right.
And you don't get the nice, fun babysitter. You get the mean babysitter.
You call.
She'll make you do all the chores.
That's right. That's right. Though I had a babysitter once that always smelled like mothballs. Like, that is the one that you call, the not fun one. Who, yeah. So yeah, and so you again, it honors the parent and honors the child in that it allows the parent to name the fact that I need to get some energy back, and it honors the child by doing the loving thing of showing the child that your actions or inactions do have consequences for your parents.
Well, I'm going to throw out some other examples there for, you know, if you don't have energy, well, you can't go to the park as you planned that afternoon, or maybe you can't drive the child to a play date, or as they get older. I know you wanted to go shopping, but I'm just completely wiped after having to, you know, wash the dishes because you let them sit for too long and they started to smell. And or this is something we managed to nip pretty early, but forgetting the lunch at home or forgetting the project at home in the morning, which meant that, you know, we would have to take it to them because, so they could eat, or, you know, the project's left at home or whatever it is. If I have to drive and cut into my morning or leave work or whatever it is, then, you know, I'm shouldering the consequence. So we need to shift that back to the kid so that behavior does not continue. And they remember to grab their lunch in the morning or to, you know, bring their project to school or whatever it is. Get the permission slip signed, you know, and, you know, there've been times where we just said, well, our rule was, you have one freebie. We'll take the lunch one time. After that, you either go hungry or you pay me to do it, and you pay what I get paid at work. So, I mean, because that's
you're being the personal chauffeur.
Yeah, and I'm losing money to take your work to you that you forgot. So.
And at the very least, you should charge the IRS mileage reimbursement rate, which is 52 cents a mile.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't have a job and you're not losing wages, you're still paying for gas and depreciation. Yeah. Another important lesson for your children to learn. Also, auto insurance.
Yeah. I mean, once they start having a little bit of money, whether they make it through chores or we don't give our kids an allowance, but we do pay them for report cards. Kind of like how you get paid for work. When they get report cards, we pay them whatever the grade is that they're in. If they get an A, they get that. So 10th grade, they get $10 for each A on their report card, which sounds like it does start to get expensive, but it's cheaper than tutoring. So
yeah, exactly.
And it's and you know, they're pretty, it's been a great incentive for them. So anyways, so once your kids start making a little bit of money, you know, suddenly there's a whole economy and you can charge them for things. So for example, what was that jar that we had, Aaron? The whining jar, I think it was.
The tattle,
tattle
jar.
That was it, tattle jar. Yeah.
He has one of those at the office too.
So
I'm just kidding.
I mean,
I think, not a bad idea, Stephanie.
I think we charged like 25 cents to listen to tattling. And so.
Oh no.
Yeah. And with three kids, that, you know, that added up. And
well, you know, any parent will tell you that tattling is, it's a no-win thing.
That's a huge drain.
Because whoever
drain.
Comes to you, it's a huge energy drain. If they come to litigate their case before you, judge mom or judge dad, you know that the other child will have a story equally compelling and heartbreaking on the other side of things. And it's just a complete no-win situation. So to say, I'm happy to listen to your tattles, it's just 25 cents per tattle. Again, it just makes, it's that little light bulb you want to come on, like, my actions are not just out there in the ether. They have legitimate consequences on my parents, which again, back to the energy drain, this is the kind of thing you want your kids to realize, that you are not an infinite pool of energy to just clean up their messes, both literal and metaphorical, all the time. And so, yeah, having the, and again, always with empathy, this is love and logic. This is not just logic and logic. We are not Vulcans. We have emotions and we want our kids to know we care about them. So this is not, you know, you drain my energy so you get to now clean the bathtub and scrub the toilets. Ha 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 ha. This is like, oh, this is, and the other thing too, and this we'll get to the skill nine a little bit, like getting them to figure out how to help you get your energy back. I am so tired after cleaning your room, or I'm so tired after having to run to Target at 8:30 p.m. on a Thursday night because you forgot that you needed supplies for your project, which is due tomorrow.
Oh, man.
I have no energy. And how? What are some ways you could help me get my energy back? And just, again, let them figure it out. And you may find miraculous things start to happen. You may find that laundry gets folded and put away because the kid knows what the chores are and what might the kitchen might get cleaned on its own. I'm not saying it's going to be a great job, but they've made the effort. So those are the things that might start happening if you say, how can you help me get my energy back?
Wait, are you saying that kids sometimes wait till the last minute to get supplies from H-E-B?
Not Zimmerman kids, I'll tell you that.
That doesn't sound like any kid I've ever heard of. I was always very good. I'm just kidding. I definitely did this relentlessly as a child growing up. I'm so sorry, Mom. I would stay up late at night finishing projects all in one day. It was horrible. Don't
Can we
do
just
that,
say
kids.
Projects are the worst?
Yeah. Ugh, like, they're horrible.
They're horrible for parents, horrible for the kids. And when I taught long enough to know that they're horrible for the teachers too.
So. Yeah.
I will say, moment of personal disclosure, I did a project in sixth grade. I procrastinated until the end of it. It was the first big, big, big project of my life. I did it all the night before it was due. I got an A on the project, which was the absolute worst thing that could
exactly.
have happened to me because it reinforced this horrible behavior, and I'm still dealing with it in my 40s.
I completely Thanks, agree, Aaron. I'm the exact same way. I've had it actually in college. A teacher said, don't do this all in one night. And what did I do? I did it all in one night, and I got an A. And I got an A, and that was the biggest problem. But anyways, well, that's we have, real, and we're sorry to parents for that. But
I have an example that we have tried this skill, Jennifer did just recently with Elizabeth, and Elizabeth had to go with Jennifer to pick something up. I was at home working. She couldn't stay at the house. She had to go. Jennifer asked Elizabeth to get her shoes and her coat so that we could go. And of course, Elizabeth was doing everything but getting shoes and coat, getting shoes and coat. Well, the natural consequence there, I mean, she has to come. We can't just leave her and say, well, right. you have to stay at home. She's 2.5. And so Jennifer said, after long battling, unfortunately, said, okay, here are some things in the living room that need to be put away because you took this time not getting your coat and shoes, now can you pick all of these things up before we go?
Right.
And Elizabeth did. And it worked too because it gave her a motivation. Like at some point it clicked like, oh, I have to do something here. I have to go, but there's a consequence still for the 20 minutes of delaying that I've done.
Right.
Yeah.
But there wasn't a natural consequence. We had to sort of create restitution for the time suck that her not getting her clothes cost.
And Neil, that's really going to pay off as she, I mean, a year from now, you will find that you probably won't have to, you won't have that particular challenge because she will she'll just be used to it. She'll know what the expectations are. She'll, you know, other than out of willful defiance, which is, you know, a little bit different, you know, like you're going to work yourself, like she'll change her behavior. Like she'll know the expectation because you're doing that and you're being consistent now.
Well, here's hoping.
And I think, you know, the word that I want to say to parents is kind of what this is aiming to do. And again, knowing that parenting is hard, nobody's perfect, and you need to adapt these to your own situation. But I think one of the things that Love and Logic does is it encourages you to not, I mean, the old phrase is kind of be a doormat for your kids. So parents love their kids. Their kids are cute. You know, and kids are extremely powerful. Like they don't follow the social norms that limit adult behavior. So kids can go to the mattresses in a way that adults can't, with screaming and tantrums and stuff. And you know, so parents will often come in and do things for their kids that their kid could have done for themselves. And again, the idea here is, the most loving thing to do for a child is to realize that their actions have consequences. And so to help parents learn to take care of themselves. Because if you go through a life of parenting where you feel like you're always cleaning up after your child's messes, that is never going to end. Because all of us, if any one of us had like a servant who always did our projects for us, always washed our clothes, always cleaned up after us, I mean, why would you ever change that? It doesn't change unless you, the parent, allows it to change.
Right.
And I think we've all met adults who were kind of raised in that sort of situation, you know, and they, I mean, there's a whole movie about it with Sarah Jessica Parker, right? Failure to Thrive, like.
Failure to launch.
Failure to launch, yeah.
Also Matthew McConaughey and Terry Bradshaw, the former Pittsburgh Steeler.
Yeah, so, I mean, there are people who just don't, I mean, you can just see that they've been raised in a way that, just as you described, they had somebody do everything for them. They didn't have to experience the natural consequences of their decisions. And I don't know about y'all, but I don't like to be around people like that. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to hire somebody like that. I don't want to, you know, it's, I mean, you have to remember that the long game here, we're raising, like our job is to raise these children into hopefully, you know, productive, self-sufficient adults.
You also, it keeps you from being so reactive as a parent. So there's the doormat, but there's also, you know, which is hard as a parent, I can attest to, like, not simply be reactive. Your child does something and, you know, you have a quick disciplinary reaction. I mean, it's natural to do that as a parent, but it's also just not helpful because you're not teaching them skills that will help them later in life. You're not actually forming them to grow as a person. You're just reacting to them. And by having some sort of restitution, you're having a plan.
Yeah.
And there's a lesson embedded in what they're having to do.
Yeah, and that reactionary parenting, Neil, results in fear that mom or dad will be angry as being the motivation. Like, that's the lesson they're learning. Don't do this bad thing because mom will be angry, which is actually not really a helpful lesson to learn. Because once they've moved out and there's no mom or dad to be angry, then, you know, I can do whatever I want. And again, we're trying to say, no, the result of you not cleaning your room is not that mom or dad is angry. The result of you not cleaning your room is mom and dad are exhausted because they had to clean your room. And so how can you help them get their energy back? Which also, by the way, ties back into empathy. Like, one of the things that Love and Logic does, as you show empathy for your children, you're also hopefully helping your children understand to have empathy for other people as they realize the impact of their actions on others.
That's a great point to make, that this is also about teaching them empathy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're by not simply being reactive and acting out of anger towards the child, you're creating a system where they can trust. You know, that you're, even when they have to suffer the natural consequences, you're going to be there with them, and it, they don't have to be afraid of you coming down on them. The consequences themselves are the punishment.
Yeah.
And you're there to help them through that, to face the consequences that they've brought on, and not simply be the person that they fear.
Yeah, it protects the relationship. I mean, and I can say, just as, you know, a mother, my, I mean, the reason that we took to Love and Logic so well is because I mean, I was about to put one or more children on eBay because, I mean, I was losing it. I mean, it was really hard. And my I mean, I was raised with yelling and punishment with no connection to the, you know, the crime or whatever. And so that was my natural reaction when I started parenting. And it just, I mean, it's like having, you know, using this method, it protects, it sort of creates a space where the parent-child relationship is protected, and you know, you're not, I'm using hand gestures, which you can't see because I think I've got a little COVID brain right now, but it just, it creates a space where you're like the consequences and you know, the reality of their decisions are outside of your relationship, and your relationship is intact and is safe.
Your relationship is not dependent on these things.
And depending on your child, and we have one child who, when they're young, they're very, very sensitive, and even the slightest sort of reaction from me would cause them to just crumble up. I mean, one time they went on a nursing strike because I just made a loud noise and just so sensitive. And I realized that if I ever yelled or had any sort of, you know, outburst, it really affected them. And I think there's probably a lot of children like that, and you have a lot of kids with different, you know, capacity for what they hear and what they feel. And, I think that, it protects us as a parent, and it, this, you know, sort of idea can, just sort of keep that relationship safe.
Yeah, I really like the way you described that. And just a few pointers about this skill is that, you know, you do give them the expectation of what you want them to do as restitution. So kind of give them a deadline or an expectation, whatever that is. And if you would like to help them, that is your choice, but Love and Logic doesn't say you can't. You can thank them if you desire to. This isn't a thing where you like throw them in the room and lock them away until the room's clean. It can be something what I'm saying is that that's your own choice. If you desire to wash the dishes with them and you dry them, like they wash them and you dry. But just giving some guidelines for this skill, and just a reminder that this is a principle. So if you hate all of the examples we gave, these are things that are adaptable to you, and these are something that you can make work in your own home effectively. So do y'all have any other thoughts about this skill before we move on?
I was just gonna say, you can kind of flip it a little bit too. There's, you know, you don't have to wait until it becomes a problem, the room being clean or whatever, the chores. You could say something like, What we'd like to do is go to the movies tonight, if we can ever go to the movies again. And, you know, but, the, you know, what needs to happen are these things. You know, how do you want to help with that? And, you know, that's
right.
So it's not even like a consequence. It's just everybody doing their part. And, you know, because
that makes sense.
That's what we have to do as adults. We have to take care of our business, and then we can do, go do, you know, work hard, play hard. And,
I like that.
Yeah. So, and I mean, it does take some, I think for little kids, they don't like, there's a lot of, you know, logic and rational thinking in there. So it's not so much for little kids, but I mean, elementary, absolutely. And, you know, I would love to go to the park today. The house needs to be clean, or the living room needs to be picked up, or homework needs to be done, or whatever it is. Like, it, you know, we could, it doesn't have to seem like a consequence, but rather a participation.
I like the way that you described that, because then it, to me, that teaches these are the things we do to take care of our business, like you said, and then we can be free and do whatever we want for fun.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I really like instilling that sort of message.
Yeah. And then, you know, incentivizing things like behavior at the store, which is, I mean, we've all seen what happens with toddlers and preschoolers and young children at the store, and any store, particularly Target. But, you know, that's something too. You can say, hey, I'd like to spend 30 minutes here, because that's about how much I need to get. If we can get through that time, maybe we'll have, you know, maybe we'll pick something up from the dollar bin or whatever, or stop for ice cream. Or, you know, I think I've mentioned before that several times I would go through the Wendy's drive-through at our, when our kids were little, because it was right by our house, and reward myself for my good behavior. And while everybody watched me eat ice cream or Frosty or whatever. But yeah, I mean, the shopping with little kids is just a nightmare. And, you know, like, you have to make it work, and incentivizing it. I'm saying incentivizing, but it's bribing them, whatever. But that's kind of how the world works. So
I know. I hear you. I prefer incentivizing. That's a good way to see it.
But,
it reminds, yeah.
And you know, and you could, you know, you say, well, if we can get through this, then we can, you know, I'd love to go to the park afterwards, or I'd love to have time to watch a movie, or whatever it is, you know, whatever works for your situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, that helps them realize that you're not saying behave in the store just because. This is not some arbitrary no fun rule that you can't just pull things off the shelves just because your mom likes to, or your dad likes to just ruin your fun. Like, so if you go into it and saying, you know, if we can get in and out of here in 30 minutes and I have enough energy at the end of it, cause you've been sweet, then maybe we'll be able to go to the park or go get some ice cream or whatever. And there you've set up the thing at the beginning where, again, they realize these actions are not just arbitrary. They do have a, again, the idea of your energy is a very powerful idea that a kid can understand, cause they know what it is to be tired and worn out. And so at the end of that time, that 30 minutes at the store, that hour at the grocery store, you can say, now I have energy, let's go to the park. Or you can say, oh, that's so such a bummer that you had a really hard time in the cereal aisle today. I don't really have any energy any more to do that thing, but so we're going to go home. Maybe you can think of a way to help me get my energy back. So, and then the last thing I want to say is too, is if you start to kind of implement this idea, your kid will catch on, and you may find them spontaneously doing things to help you get your energy back. And so, and that's a really good thing. If you find out that your child has put away her toys and then comes to you and says, Mom, I put away all the toys in the living room, and do you have any energy? You want to absolutely have some energy and say, I do. I'm so excited. Thank you so much. Because that's the kind of thinking that you want them to have, to realize that they're part of this household. They're part of helping you. Like, we all work together, and if stuff gets done, then we can do fun stuff. So so hopefully your child will begin to learn that this is how the world works and will begin to do things maybe on their own initiative. And you want to make sure you affirm and reward all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, let's we can go ahead and move on to skill number 9, the very last skill, which is guiding kids to own and solve their problems. And so this skill is more of a universal strategy for empowering others. This isn't limited to children. So this is helpful, I think, really for anybody. But this skill is, it assumes that the more problem solving that they do, the more common sense they'll have later on, sort of. It accumulates, you know. And so the way to do this is to begin with empathy, like most things in Love and Logic. We want to say, oh, no, this is a problem. This is upsetting for you. Or I can understand how this is upsetting. And then after empathy, you hand the problem back to them, as we've talked about at the very beginning. And handing the problem back is one of the overarching principles of Love and Logic. So after you show them that you care, you can ask them what they might do to solve this problem.
I saw a great example of this on Ted Lasso, which is the main reason to get Apple TV, where Ted Lasso, played by Jason Sudeikis, is an American football coach that goes to coach soccer in England. And there's a situation in the locker room where one of the younger players keeps bullying an assistant on the team. And the older player goes to complain to coach Ted Lasso and say, you got to intervene here. You got to solve. And coach Ted refuses to do it. Not in a mean way, but he's like, nope, I'm just not going to get involved. He gives the problem back to this guy who was upset about this, who then goes and effectively deals with the problem. And it's anyway, a lot of good parenting and life applications in Ted Lasso. End of plug. And certain illustrations, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think that's good. I think this sort of, you know, saying, hey, this is a problem. What do you think you might do to solve this problem? To me, that teaches problems as something to be tackled or addressed rather than an immediate closed door. Especially with children, if they're kind of looking to an authority figure to direct them, then it helps to open the world up a little bit to say, I have the power to address this problem rather than just seeing it as something that I can never get over.
It's also more collaborative. Parenting role, instead of you doing, you know, the project or the thing for them, you're there to as a consultant to help them when they need it, you know, to give teaching and guidance, but not to fix the problem for them. So it takes you out of that role.
Yeah, once you start fixing their problems, it's really hard.
It
never ends, and they become used to it, and then they don't become problem solvers. The kids don't.
Well, they don't. Yeah, that's exactly right. They don't learn how to do a thing. I think of a parent who does a project for their kid and makes all the letters straight and the picture's perfect and the glue is not all over the thing. So they have a perfect project, but the kid hasn't learned a thing. They actually do need to do a really terrible job at a project and get the grade that results from that. They need to cut corners, have the letters all be different sizes, have the glue hanging off the page, and then have the teacher point it out to them. Because that's going to be a lot more effective than you being uptight and anal retentive and like I am about like all that stuff and like trying to make them be as OCD as I am. That's not going to work.
But yeah, we just don't even look at our kids' projects. I mean, I'm not even kidding. We are yeah, especially the ones that they do physically. We just, like, we see it when they present it because it's hard for us. But
those are some creative spellings.
Yeah, but you know what? They learn the material when they do the work themselves, mm-hmm. and you know, the teachers can tell when parents do the work. Students can tell when parents do the work. And they're not, I mean, they're ultimately not learning anything, so.
I still remember the information about the Karankawa Indians on Galveston Coast from 7th grade, because I had to do a project for Texas history choosing a tribe, a Texas tribe, and my mom refused to do any of it. And, you know, my project was pretty cruddy looking compared to many of my peers in the class.
But you did it.
But I did do it. I definitely was like the night before, like, Mom, can we go to the store? But I still remember information that I learned because I was forced to do all of it on my own.
Yeah.
Right. Shout out to
empowered. Julie. You were empowered to do it all on your own.
Yeah, would you like to share some of those facts?
They practice ritual cannibalism.
Oh, my.
Oh, my. Other?
I was also a seventh grade boy, so I was primed to remember that information.
That's mainly what you
learned all the gross and gory things about these natives.
It was cool.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, and the other thing is, as the kids get older, they don't want to know what you think. Like, they don't.
Right?
They're kind of.
That was me.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm doing this project. Don't bother me.
Right. And,
you know,
when they're, if you get in the habit of doing the projects for them or being really involved when they're younger, they're just going to rely on that. And, you know, but if you, you know, they like eventually they'll stop doing projects. I mean, they're not going to know how to do it and they'll kind of give up, but also, you know, with, in general, like they don't really care what you think about, you know, what your solution is to solving something. So if you're not training them earlier, you know, like in elementary, middle school to solve their own problems, as they get older, they're going to look elsewhere. And they're not going to be equipped themselves. They're going to look to other places, and it's not going to be the parent that they're looking to because, you know, we don't know anything.
Yeah, and there are definitely some children out there who any suggestion from a parent means that suggestion will never be followed.
Yeah.
And so unsolicited advice is often just rejected out of hand, even if it's great advice for adults as well as children. Mm-hmm. You're not the boss of me. It just produces this defensiveness.
Who here likes being lectured all the time by people? Right?
Yeah, zero people.
Nobody's raising their hand.
So I think saying something like, that sounds like a real problem. How do you think you're going to deal with that? Is going to be much more effective in the long run. And I think, and by the way here, like kind of side note, if there are any parents listening who have done a lot of their children's projects for them, or who have maybe done 50% of their children's projects for them or some significant percentage, and you're feeling guilty right now, just know that so Jesus loves you and you're forgiven, and we, every person on this podcast, could give an example of how we have all failed in our interactions with children.
Oh my
and
gosh, yeah.
Not follow these wonderful directions of love and logic. And I think the thing to remember is that we're presenting ideas, suggestions, just like, you know, basically we're trying to do for you what we needed to have done for us. Like, here's some things that have worked. Maybe you want to try them, but we're not telling you to do these things necessarily. But I will say on this topic of projects also, if you are the kind of parent that has gotten very involved, or you're the kind of parent who parenting is like an invitation to know yourself a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And one of the things you might learn about yourself is that you are, for example, your own neuroses, idiosyncrasies, anxieties, background, whatever, have made you the person that it drives you crazy for your child to turn in a project that is not perfect. Now, this is your own stuff. And so what parenting does is it kind of, if you're willing to see, can hold up a mirror to you. And the point is not to shame you. The point is to help you maybe look at yourself a little bit, as St. Paul says, like examine yourself. Don't think of yourself more highly than you ought. So it's like a window that kind of shows you who you are. And then it invites you to get therapy or whatever you may need. Like it's right. An invitation to do some of that moral inventory, that just kind of getting to know yourself and dealing with some of your stuff. And the more healthy you can be, and we're all on a journey our whole life and we'll never finish. You never graduate from your humanity, as they say. But the more healthy you can be, the more effective these kinds of things are going to be. So we're not here to shame anyone, to say we're in the same boat with you. And if you do realize you are overly attached to your children's success, to reflect back on your worth as a human being, well, now you have an invitation to call up a therapist and do some work and know that you are loved and a human being who is cherished by God despite your failures. So, right. I mean, that's, I just want to kind of say that.
Absolutely.
We're all bad parents to some extent.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this is born out of failure. I mean, I'm not giving examples of the times I failed and then had to, like, change how I do things.
That's a different podcast.
So we're talking about like ways that techniques that we have seen work after failing at it.
It's hard figuring out what age appropriate, because at different ages things work mm-hmm. at different times. And I did a thing with Elizabeth where she wasn't getting in the car. We were at the park. And so I said, okay, kids who don't get in the car, looks like I'm going to have to go. And so I got in the car and turned it on. And I thought it would be a good lesson that she would see. And she terrified her. And she was like, thought she was being abandoned. And I felt so horrible and guilty. Like I apologized to her the whole ride home. And I realized this was a learning moment for me that maybe later in life, this is a thing that can work.
It's but it
was
a little like, young.
I didn't drive off, okay? I wasn't going to leave my kid at the park.
If I put my jacket on, my dad will abandon me.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. No, but it was just like, but how you figure that out is by
doing the wrong thing.
Doing the wrong thing.
Absolutely.
Turns out 8-year-old is too young to watch The Shining, but I could have known that.
That's right. The toddler can't chop the wood for the fireplace.
I appreciate both of those things, because you're definitely right that parenthood will hold up a mirror to you, and the things that you know you weren't able to receive as a child are going to be difficult to hand out to your kids as well. Mm-hmm. But if you don't mind, I'm going to finish the complete skill. We kind of stopped in the middle of the I have no regrets, but I do want to finish just so you kind of get the complete steps. So the first step is empathy. This is a problem. This is really upsetting. The next is to hand the problem back and to, you know, kind of see what would you do to deal with this. It's okay if they say, I don't know, by the way. If they don't know, then that's fine. That's a perfectly decent answer. Then you can ask them if they'd like to hear options. I wouldn't give suggestions unless they say yes, though. So if they are interested in hearing options, then give them a few options, 2 or 3, or however many. You can say, some kids have done this. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that? I know, Erin, in the past you've said, would you like to hear what other kids have done in this situation? And then you can say, how would that work out for you? And this line of questioning helps to avoid resistance from them. Like you said, mm-hmm. if you give a lecture or your opinions without them asking for it, I would just throw it right in the trash as a child. So
yeah.
How would that work out for you if, you know, some of these options that I've given from other people? And then you can allow them to solve or not solve the problem. You can show faith in them and allow them to work on it themselves. Like, you can build them up, but that's different from fixing it. And then I think it's good to, if they need some of that reinforcement of reminding them, it's okay if we need to talk about this again. If you want some help from me later, just let me know. But let them decide and let them do it. Those are the kind of steps that I think are empowering to them, that they get to decide, they have the information, and they can go from there.
Mm-hmm. And that thing you say, like allowing them to solve or not solve the problem, sounds so easy, but is so hard, because as an adult, most situations we kind of know how to solve, at least the kinds of situations our kids are bringing to us. Mm-hmm. So we want to jump in. I mean, it is most parents' reflex when a child says, I've got this problem, the parent says, well, let me help you, or let me tell you what to do. And taking a step back and just take a beat and pause, breathe for a sec. And, you know, love and logic is just as much about kind of retraining ourselves as parents to, instead of jumping in with that problem or that solution to the problem, saying, huh, That's interesting. What are you going to do? What do you think you want to do about that? But then actually like letting them then solve or not solve the problem. It's hard, but that's how they're going to actually learn.
And this might look like a grade, a bad grade. If your kids care about grades, some kids do not care about grades. But if they do, then, you know, it could be like, oh, they got a, you know, they didn't pass a math test or whatever. And they're telling you about it. And you're like, man, you know, I really understand we've worked so hard and I know how much you care about this. You know, what's your plan to bring up your grade? And, you know, they might say, oh, I don't know. Give some excuse. Well, would you like some ideas, or, you know, do you want to move forward with this? And, you know, kind of let another way that right. I could see this coming up is with their relationship. And, you know, somebody says something mean to a friend says something unkind to your child and they're telling you about it. And, you know, that I know how much this person means to you. And that just sounds like it really hurts. And, you know, what's your plan for next steps in this relationship? Or what's your, how do you want to handle this? Or, you know, and right. So it kind of gets them thinking about how to deal with that. Now, I will say that there are times where I think it's appropriate for a parent to take over and really intervene in situations where there's sure. bullying happening, for example.
Problems are too big for the kid to handle.
Absolutely.
Like, and it has to be age appropriate and something that they can actually solve.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, this year I have had to step in like I have never, ever, ever stepped in with, because we're doing remote learning and, you know, but that it gets to a point where after, you know, if your child tries, if they're working with an adult and they do try to solve the problem, but they're either ignored or, you know, they can't, that they're not being treated fairly, then, you know, there are times when, you know, I think it's appropriate for a parent to intervene. And if there's a situation of injustice or, you know, and it's important to involve them so they can see how you handle that. But, you know, we are parents and we do, you know, we do have to protect them at times and solve problems that are adult problems and not really child problems that the child has created or, right. You know, it's too big for them.
I think that's a good differentiation because, you know, the skill isn't really about leaving them out in the cold, but we do need to protect them when we need to. So, mm-hmm. I appreciate you saying that. Well, if y'all don't have any more on this specific skill, we do have a few, questions to talk about at the very end. And we will also be taking questions for our next episode, so be sure to write in to us if you have any thoughts or other questions about any of the skills altogether. We would love to at least read them and tackle them as best we can. So, Aaron, what were some of the things we received?
Well, I just want to say that it's nothomealone@stalbanswaco.org is the email address to write us. And you get to decide whether there is an episode 6 or not on the Love and Logic parenting. And that's if you have questions that you want to mail in. One of the questions that, you know, that we've talked about and that came across in reading is not really a question, just kind of pointing out the fact, and we want to make sure our listeners know that, that if you are parenting a child that has is on the autism spectrum or has trauma that they've dealt with in their life and that affects how their cognition and their behavior interacts now, if you have a child that's not neurotypical, that all these suggestions and ideas and thoughts that come with Love and Logic need to be tailored to your situation. It's definitely not a one-size-fits-all. It's not one-size-fits-all with neurotypical children, and it's definitely not a one-size-fits-all with people that are dealing with just different situations. So all that to say is we acknowledge that reality and thank God for the professionals and the educators who are really good at that. And there are some Love and Logic resources that are available out there, books and things that are there to help you.
Go ahead. If you actually are interested in Love and Logic materials, they have like different kinds of books for different things. So like a little bit more specific than the Parenting with Love and Logic book that I've referenced a few times. That's kind of the basic book, but they have lots of other material. So I encourage you to check those out if you're interested. And even in the Parenting with Love and Logic book, they have a lot of case study examples, mm-hmm. so many things in that book that we did not talk about in this podcast, because this podcast is more about the skills, and those skills are very overarching. They're more general principles rather than the specific behaviors. So just want to say that as well.
Yeah, but I know there's a Love and Logic for toddlers. There's a Love and Logic for just in general, which is I think the book you're referencing. There's one for teenagers. There's one for marriages.
Why are you laughing, Andrea?
Because it's pretty much the same as the one for toddlers.
Oh.
Hey. No, but it's a lot of the same. We were talking beforehand. You know, I say, what is your plan a lot in our home to everybody?
She's empowering like what Princess Butter, you.
That's right. It's what Princess Buttercup says to farm boy Wesley. And, you know, he understands what she really means.
That's right. Exactly.
So one other question we have was just this idea of delayed consequences. And it kind of relates to this issue if you have a child that is not neurotypical but for really any there's so many differences among children, and some children if there is not an immediate consequence, it is hard to make the connection between the consequence and the behavior. And so I think there's a couple things about that. I think, you know, again, feel free to adjust this to your situation. If delayed consequences don't work that well, and don't use them, and work on finding an immediate consequence that is effective, where the child will learn that the impact of X behavior is Y. I think another thing just to note is delayed consequences are not things where you are saying, you're not like surprising the kid. Like the kid does something, there's nothing happens with this behavior, and then, you know, 2 weeks later you spring something on them. That's not what we mean. And I don't know if that's what this question was referencing, but it was. With delayed consequences, you always want to make sure the child knows immediately after the action that there will be a consequence. You just need some time to figure it out. So, if there's been a major bickering thing between two siblings and you are at your wit's end and whatever, again, that's a thing where you're like, you know, I'm going to need some time to think about. The consequence but again, back to earlier, like skill for today, the restitution, making of energy, that would be one where kind of like helping me get my energy back would be a good immediate consequence that they can figure out. But anyways, all that to say is delayed consequence doesn't mean you don't do anything and then you surprise them a week later. It means you say, I need some time to think about what the consequence is going to be.
And that might look like I need to talk to your dad or your other parent, and we're going to have a discussion about this because it's, you know, pretty big. In the meantime, I'm going to need to, you know, get my energy back. You could really, you know, build that one up because there's a lot of time. But it's more, I think the delayed consequence, I mean, at least how we've used it practically, is more for the parent to have some space to think rationally and
cool down.
Yeah. And then because you want it to be a consequence and not a punishment. And, you know, especially as the kids get older, you really have to, sometimes you really have to think, about what is the consequence, because there might be a behavior that is not okay, but the consequence isn't as, it's not like when they're younger, when you can eat the ice cream in front of them or whatever, you know, you have to be more, you have to be a lot more thoughtful about it. And, so having that space and that break and that, deliberate time, and then being able to consult with your partner, I think is, you know, that's the point of the delayed consequence. And then the kid kind of sits in their wonder about what is going to happen, especially if you've, you know, if they know that there will be something. So, you know, the living room might turn up clean. There might be some vacuuming. they might try to mitigate that consequence a little bit in the meantime.
And, you know, one other thing that occurs to me is that if your child needs immediate consequences and the delayed consequences don't work well for him or her, and let's say your immediate consequence for sort of any behavioral infraction would be, I take away your screen or something like that. You know, that could be presented as a punishment, which kind of goes against the grain of what we're trying to do with love and logic. Like, you said a bad word, so I take away your iPad. Like, that doesn't make sense. Those things are not logically connected. But you can do some work, however, to reframe that in a way that the consequence is the same, take away the iPad, but you do it in a way that maybe helps them connect a little bit, like this is a consequence. You could say, you know, iPads are for children that I feel like I can trust. And right now I feel like I can't trust you because, you know, in this household we speak kindly to each other and you're not doing that, and that makes me wonder about how you're communicating with people online. And so we're going to take this away until I feel like I can trust you with it again. Like, and that is more of a natural consequence sort of thing.
Yeah, it seems like the screen has been a bad influence on you. Like,
that's great.
The way you're treating.
Good job, Andrew. You're a great parent.
Well, I might have experience in this particular issue. But it seems like whatever you're doing online right now or recently is a bad influence, is you know, causing your behavior to change and to, you know, be unkind. So we're going to just remove that for a little while so you can reset. And I know you don't want to create the habit of treating people unkindly. So we're going to take it away for a while and, you know, until I feel like, you know, you're ready for it again.
Which is different than you've been a bad dog, so I'm taking away your toy.
Yeah,
like it's a very different way.
That's a punishment. That's a punishment. It's not a consequence. And as they get older, I mean, screens, that's the main economy for most families. I mean, you're not going to take their books away. You're going to like that's the reality. Darn. Is I mean, especially right now, the screens are that's the currency, and so. You know, do screens get games get played if, you know, chores aren't done? Do, like, you can connect them. Like, we don't get to go play as adults before our chores are done, right? Usually, if we're, you know, or right. Before our work is done. So, yeah, you just have to kind of make it connect. And like, you just have to think about it a little bit further. You know, you can absolutely make a phone connect to, or a smartphone device connect to, you know, treating people unkindly, or you just have to, you know, think about it. So
great parenting, Andrea. The last question we had was about the technique of redirection through choices. So if there's kind of a behavior that you want to avoid, and you can redirect the kid by giving them choices. Do you want to leave the play date now, or do you want to leave in 5 minutes? Do you want to wear the green shoes or the red shoes? And how that works, you know, that might work for younger kids, but how does that work as children age when they can see through your parenting ploys? What kind of thoughts or responses do you guys have on that one?
Well, yeah, as they get older, they're not so much into the choices. I found myself saying things like, you know, we can leave when you're dressed appropriately. And, you know, and so as an adult, you have to, like, you're not leaving them, you're not doing this the minute you know you have to be out the door. So 5 minutes before, you know, that's when you go through all this. So there's time to, you know, deal with this. But yeah, like, we'll go shopping when you have the right shoes on, or
like doing chores, maybe.
Yeah. With chores, you can use whatever their currency is. So if it's screens or if it's participating in a game. Now, we're not real big sports people, but if we were, we'd miss a lot because we'd be leveraging it. And I know other people will drop anything to go play a sport. But, you know, like a movie, like, you know, we'll watch a movie when this is done or. Mm-hmm.
No, I see what you're saying. I think there's ways to maybe make that a little bit more age appropriate for when they can. They're not really responding to the choices.
Right. Yeah.
Or make the choices that are good for them. I think that's just a experiment a little bit.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, kids, like we have kids who are driving now or starting to drive driving. And, you know, that's a pretty big thing to trust somebody with a vehicle. And so, you know, sometimes one might have to say, you know, something like, well, you know, if you can't maintain your room, how do I know you're going to maintain my car? Or, you know, for example, right. Hypothetically.
Yeah.
You know, there's, so it changes as they get older.
I think that's a great point, Andrea. There's the question from this listener, was, you know, the redirection for choices when children are little involves those kinds of things we've talked about, like, do you want to wear the red shoes or the green shoes? And the question was, how does this age? Because what if there's not always going to be somebody giving them, a creative parent giving them the feasible options? And so right. There is a time when, as you said, Andrea, and this is what the listener was asking, like, is there a point where you don't maybe give them the choices, but you say, what are some options that you might have that would help you do this thing? And which is exactly what you've described. So this parent was kind of right on track, kind of already thinking through what this might look like as they get older. Because the whole point is that they ultimately get to a place where they can figure out what the options are for them and make good choices. And they only learn that by making choices, sometimes the bad ones, sometimes the good ones, but they all kind of teach them. So yeah, when they're little, you might do some of that pre-thinking for them, giving them the choices, but at some point you do have to let them kind of figure out what the choices are on their own. And that looks like exactly what you said, like, what are the things that you could do? Or like you said, Andrea, we'll leave when you get ready. Or we can leave when you're ready to go. We can leave when you're dressed appropriately. We can leave when you have shoes on. You're not telling them what to do. You're just letting them know kind of how it's going to work, and then they can figure out what the appropriate response is.
Yeah, and I've known parents who have taken their children to the jail. And
I'm surprised that Vance Drum never did this.
Yeah, no, but I've known several, and you know, they see what happens when. You know, if you have a child that's really acting out, at some point those children are going to be held accountable for those actions not from their parent, but from authorities. So, you know, right. Kind of showing them the, you know, scaring them a little bit. But really, I mean, if you have a giant tantrum in a restaurant that has other people feeling really uncomfortable, somebody's going to call the police. Like, so, like, right. we need to, like,
your video will go viral and you will have to quit your job and resign as CEO of the company when you go on a racist rant in a restaurant in California, just hypothetically speaking.
Yeah. I mean, gosh, we haven't even gotten into what happens, with the internet, but, yeah, there's a lot of accountability out there, legal accountability and social accountability via the internet. And, yeah, so, the other thing I wanted to mention is, again, like, so if you're a child, as you're raising your children, I think it's important to always have, some people in their lives that are not related to them, who are role models and who are people
yes.
Who like So they have something to sort of reach for that are not their parents. And so they have goals, right? You want your kids to have goals. We all do. But that doesn't just come naturally. And so for us, it's been important that each of our kids, and this is really hard to do this particular year, but, you know, like have your kids as they get older, even, you know, not, I mean, I say older, I'm thinking middle school, early high school, like have them shadow somebody, have them, you know, one thing that we love about youth group is that they have a connection with another adult or more than one adults that are not, you know, related to them, who are role models for them. And I know that puts a lot of pressure on you, Stephanie, but I mean,
well, no, I'm,
another adult
you're who's, right, though.
Who's a, you know, a professional who has, you know, their own life, who pays rent or has a mortgage, you know, like other people. So if they have those people in their lives and they have goals, they have, then when they're in fifth grade or sixth grade and, you know, maybe they're like, you can sort of, you know, if they're getting a bad grade or whatever, you know, you can remind them they have something outside of them that sort of pulls them in a direction, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
And I think that, like, the things that you say as a parent, you know, like we were saying earlier about the, when you're giving advice, it's kind of like, well, they just kind of, sometimes at a certain age, it's like, okay, mom, you know.
Yeah.
But when you hear that same thing from that role model or the person that you're talking about, it really sticks, and it's not the first time they've heard it either. So they know that, oh, maybe mom was just saying that because she's my mom, or maybe she's saying that because this is the truth. And this is what this person who I respect also believes. And I'm going to, you know, it motivates them, like you're saying, on what kind of person they want to be.
Right.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, I think one of the other things that Love and Logic sometimes talks about is having conversations in front of your kids, knowing that they will overhear it. So, you know, you can talk about, you can talk about things like just from your work life or your personal life, professional life. You know, so-and-so did this thing and it made me feel so great. Or so-and-so, I was doing this project with a coworker and they completely dropped the ball and it was such a disaster or whatever. Like your kids, you know, what's the old saying? Like things are mostly caught rather than taught.
Oh, yes. I have heard that. Sort of that is 100% true.
Yeah, so just know that when you're having your daily debrief with your spouse at the, you know, in the kitchen or whatever, that your kids are hearing all of that sort of stuff, and you can be thoughtful, intentional about what those conversations are to kind of reinforce some of the things you're trying to do at home, and being open about your own failures, your own struggles, and things you've learned from them, and your kids will catch a lot of that stuff.
Right, and that kind of goes both ways. Some things you should be cautious about talking about in front of them, but. You know, they do,
yes.
they catch it either way. So
yeah,
I think that's a good reminder. Well, unless we have anything else, they'll probably do it for us today. As a reminder, Aaron mentioned our email address earlier. It's notHomeAlone@StAlbansWaco.org. And we would love for you to write in some questions or any thoughts you have about the podcast. And we will definitely talk about those in our next episode. But that is the end of our skills of love and logic that we've talked about in the last 5 episodes. So I hope you've enjoyed it, and we would love to hear some feedback from you. Please go rate and review our podcast on Apple Podcasts, and we will see you next time. Bye.